Welcome. I'm an international adoptee and host of the Anna Jinja Show, who believes that we all experience adoption in our lives. We actively choose the people, values, and experiences that create who we are and who we are yet to be. And this is why I invite you to listen to the guests and creative content that guide us to knowing that we each have a home in this world, cradled in the belief that we belong, that we are worthy, and that we are loved. So stay tuned and you may discover your own adoption story. Now, speaking of story, our guest is all about writing stories for The Post. And Maggie and I were introduced to each other through being connected to Ohio University. So that's kind of a bumbling introduction. So Maggie, why don't you introduce yourself and what do you think our listeners should know about you?
Hi, my name is Maggie Johnsanti. I am a freshman here at Ohio University. I was really interested in this story because my oldest sister, Sarah, is adopted from Colombia through the organization called FANA. I thought Anna's story is very interesting and she has been wonderful to work with. And I'm very excited to be releasing this wonderful article about this podcast.
Yeah, so Maggie, what's interesting is that when you selected this story, you had to ask if there was a conflict of interest because you had an adopted sister. And so what was the answer? And obviously, we know the answer because you're here doing the story. But what were some of the concerns that you had when you were thinking that it was a conflict of interest?
I was thinking maybe that if it was more about like reviewing the actual content, that they would be worried about a bias, but they were looking more in the direction of giving just people information about it, bringing attention to it, and how you work in art and music to express people's feelings and emotions about fostering and adoption. So they were like, there's no conflict of interest. Go ahead. And I was very excited.
Oh, that's great. Well, I think that we talked a little bit yesterday at Donkey and about the connection to this podcast and to Ohio University and just the Athens community in general. And one of the things that I'm really proud of is that, you know, just by because I think I told you yesterday that I thought about not continuing discontinuing doing the show. And then things happen where I'm introduced to someone like Carolyn Lewis who makes a phone call. And the next thing I know, Adam Rich and WUB are part of this passion project, which is such an honor to be part of the WUB family. So I wanted to continue the show. And even when you reached out to me to say that you were the reporter assigned to the story, I didn't even know that you had a connection to adoption. And so one of the things I was going to ask you, which I'm still going to ask you, is that in my introduction, I talk about how I think that we all experience adoption in our lives. And before we came and did this interview, I spoke to my husband's higher ed doc students about adoption because they're studying Asian identity theory development in higher ed. And so, but I talked about how like people assume things when they see me. They think I must speak Japanese, that I must like kimchi, and that many things about me. But then they find out, well, she doesn't like kimchi. She hates kimchi. And she's doing Duolingo at the very level one of learning how to do Spanish, but don't know any Korean other than probably Kawasaki in Ohio. But anyway, back to you, Maggie. So I say about how we all experience an adoption in our lives. And what is your response to that when you saw that in the script?
A lot of people will experience it. I mean, even with like your dog. But for me, it's always been a huge aspect of my life. My parents never wanted my sister to like hide it or feel bad about it because it's just how she ended up being in our family. And I know my life would not be as great as it is without her because we argue all the time, but I love her to pieces.
Yeah. And that is very common for any kind of sister relationship. Definitely. The fighting is part of being part of family, I think.
Oh, yeah. My dad, he always likes to say, I don't care how you came to me. I'm going to get mad at all you three the same.
I love that. That's awesome. That is great. Well, one of the things that we talked about and that you shared with me is that you had done a presentation, a slide deck. Would you mind just introducing that? And I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about that.
Sure. So at my high school, there's something called SUPO, which is Syracuse Unity Project Advance. I'm from New York, so I don't know if they do it in Ohio. But it's supposed to be like a good way to introduce students to college level English. And so for my last assignment, we had to do a project on something we were passionate about. And I wanted to focus on adoption. And as I was looking for like the very specific subject I wanted to focus on, I was very interested in Irish baby homes, which were homes that bastard children or children born out of wedlock would be sent to or already be born into, because women would be sent there to have the child in secrecy, and how the adoption there was often illegal. They would be sent to other countries, and many children wouldn't even know this because of how stigmatized adoption was and how stigmatized it was to be a child out of wedlock because of the major Catholic presence there, especially after they emancipated from Britain, because they saw their Catholic identity as something that held them morally higher than the rest while they may not have been economically succeeding, which was something I found very fascinating while researching this.
Yeah, I mean, I read through your slides too, and many of the things I didn't know. And one of the things I found fascinating, just because one of my other guests talked about how she had disowned her parents because she felt that adoption was a money-making operation. And when I read your slides about how adoption was a lucrative business for nuns and funded many homes in the lavish lives of church clergy, and that, again, adoption being as a profitable business, it stung a little bit to think about how these adoptions and these adoptees really were victims.
Yeah, so I feel like it was very dehumanizing for the children and the mothers who went through this process, which is why I am very passionate about foster care and adoption reform, because I know by no means it's perfect, but I do know that there are many wonderful foster parents and there are many wonderful adoption agencies like the one my parents went through. They did tons of research when they were figuring out what they wanted to do. It's the only place that you can only adopt from Colombia through the organization. It's run by this like amazing family. They provide schooling for children there, even if you're not in the adoption agency. They provide pre-birth care to the mothers and even care afterwards, even if they don't decide to give their child up for adoption because they're like, I'm actually in a more economically stable position, or I believe I just want to raise this child myself or with somebody else. So I know that my sister and my family are lucky to have a good experience, but I do understand that there are some places where it's still stigmatized and seen as a way to make money instead of helping these vulnerable children.
Yeah, and I think the thing that that was probably a theme that I read through this presentation and some of our discussion too is that many children birth certificates were forged to show that their adoptive parents as their biological parents to hide the shame of the women and make the children hidden. And that shame that you were talking about, and also just the lie of being able to forge a birth certificate to alter the true origin story is somewhat horrifying.
Yeah, that part was very shocking to me when I read it, especially because that was also a common practice here in America. I feel like a big part of that is they want to hide like the identity of these children. And from my research, I found that identity is important for everybody, whether you're adopted, you are in foster care, you have lived with your birth parents. And I find myself very lucky because I've learned a lot about my sister's culture, and my sister participates in what you would consider like my birth family's culture, which is really just making sauce and us loving St. Patty's Day because it's awesome. But I know that it is a big aspect of what some adopted children feel that they don't have. So I find it very like beautiful how much my parents have gone to make sure my sister knows that she's part of our family, but also that she has this beautiful culture that she comes from and she should not be afraid of learning about it and exploring it.
Yeah, I love that what's happening in your family or what has happened and is happening is this interchange of like culture and being able to share each other's stories and learn from each other and those family dynamics that are just part of every family. And that's a good way for me to introduce these creative interchanges that we do as part of this show. because I really believe how we can discover how we can be and become our best selves is to connect with these artistic expressions of our shared experiences. And my sister, she was interviewed a couple weeks ago, and I use the same song or the same musician for her show. I think Millie Raccoon is such an amazing artist. I love her music. I love her spirit. And so she picked out a song that is connecting the thread of spirituality, healing, and liberation that is interwoven through her work. And she picked the song for us, Maggie. Let's listen to Nothing to Hide, a song written and performed by Millie Raccoon and The New Normal. And then we'll come back and talk about that song. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. That's awesome. We just listened to Millie Raccoon and The New Normal, and the song was New Normal, New Normal. So Millie, she wrote to me when I talked about this song. She said this, I wrote the song after someone died who I had a little love affair with, but they had ghosted me before they died because it turned out that they were hiding the fact they had a girlfriend. I was hurt, but also kind of hiding a relationship as well. Everyone was hiding something. Even though the failed relationship caused pain, his sudden death made me want to forgive everything and just hope he'd move to a good place and honor the incredible musician he was. I really did have a dream after he died and wondered about it because I am a dream interpreter. So that's what Millie had to say about the song and connected to our conversation. Maggie, how do you respond to the song and Millie's feedback?
I feel like a part of it kind of made me feel about like people's experience and then deciding if they want to look more into their birth family, if they don't want to, kind of like maybe the process if they decide to, they find a wall and they feel stuck, or they just feel like I have enough or like information or I am okay with not knowing anything. I have this wonderful adopted family, hopefully. So I feel like it's a little bit about like the process of coming to terms with like whether you want to find out about your birth family or not, and what it means to be adopted in like our current society.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And I thought about when I learned more about Millie's song, about the fact that I had pretty much ghosted myself. In many ways, I had completely abandoned all things related to me being born in Korea, my adoption story, and I just wanted to hide it. I wanted to hide my name, in which we talked about that yesterday, about how the reason why the show is named The Anna Ginger Show is because it forces me to say my middle name, which was designated and given to me by the International Adoption Agency. So I think Millie's right. There are so many things that we want to hide because we're afraid. We're afraid of what does that mean. And then I love the part where that death of that loved person just realized, you know, in the end, we just have to forgive and love each other. I have to forgive myself for like denying the parts of who I am and hopefully learn from it and forgive myself. And I like what you said, too, about those that may not want to find their biological family. And that's OK, too. And I'm sure that your research showed that some people probably didn't want to find out the truth. And that's OK.
Yeah. So a lot of what I researched was more about like between the 1900s up until like the 1980s. And a lot of it showed that a lot of people were more curious about it because of the fact that it had been hidden. And a lot of them, it was a white child being adopted into a white family. And that was where they would force birth certificates. And a lot of times the children wouldn't find out until later in life. Or if they did know, it would be hidden. So a lot of them were a little bit more curious just because of like the stigma surrounding it, I feel like. So I didn't really do a lot about like modern day adoption, although obviously I have my own experience with it. So I know that it's a process of deciding whether you're curious about it, whether you want to know. I did read that a lot of kids want to know for medical reasons if they decide to have their own children, to know like, is there like a worry I should have about passing on like a medical condition? And some were curious about their cultural background, if they may have been adopted from a country and they're just curious if they have other cultural like identities that they may want to explore. And some are like, okay, whatever, it's part of me, I'm fine with not knowing.
Yeah, absolutely, I get that. What do you think that you want as you selected this story and your own personal story, what do you think you want others to know about adoption in general?
I feel like right now there's, at least I've seen a lot coming out about like unregulated practices and just how we as a like a society and a country can do better with it. But I want people to know that it's a very beautiful thing, and I have gotten one of the most important people in my life from it. And it's a complicated process, but my parents, they did research, reading, they talked to like specialists about how to make sure they broach the topic right, make sure that my biological sister and I understood what it meant when we were really young, but that no matter what, She's my sister. Blood doesn't matter because all that matters is love. So I really want people to know that it may be complex because of what's going on and what's being revealed about certain practices that have been held. If you really love this person in your life and you may not be genetically related, who cares? They're the best. If they're one of the best people, like my sister is for me, as long as you love each other, that's truly what makes a family.
So tell us a favorite story that you have about you and your sister.
Oh, gosh. There's so many. Oh, this is probably one of my favorites. So my mom used to be a stay-at-home mom up until I was in about first grade. So a lot of times, like on days that we had off, or I'm from Buffalo, so we had a lot of snow days. My mom would let my sister Sarah do mystery drinks, and she would pour the grossest things into smoothies. She would put mustard, like Czech cereal, and then like pickle juice.
Ew.
They were awful. And she would do like the worst flavors just to annoy my sister Emily and I.
Ew, I'm not going to try that flavor combination, I got to say.
No, I would not if I were you.
But that sounds like an interesting game. One of the things that you told me yesterday about your mom is that, what did she do to be able to make sure that your sister was connected to her culture?
So my mom actually started something called Spanish Camp. They changed the name to Colombian Culture Camp a few years ago, but we all kind of called it Spanish Camps because that was the original name. But my mom started it along with a few other parents who had children who were adopted from Fauna and moved into the Western New York area. And it would be a week-long celebration of everything Colombian culture. And they would have a elementary and middle school program and then a high school program. And the elementary program would focus usually one day on animals, one day on food, which was everybody's favorite, one day on like the geography and terrain, the language, and there would always be art and music classes that would focus on traditional music. There'd be dancing too and like art styles from Colombia. And then the teen program would be about like former Fauna children and what they're up to. There would be volunteer work. They would also do cooking because everybody really loved the cooking. If you have not tried Colombian food, you have got to. Empanadas, mwah, delicious. My mom passed that off a few years ago to a new mother who I believe has a child in elementary school, because my mom was like, I've run it for like 15 years. Is it time to give another person a shot? It was always my favorite week of the summer. I loved it, had so much fun. Plus, I got to get there early and stay late because my mom ran it. So I would hang out with all the fun teachers and I would get to go behind the scenes. So that's what my mom did. And we would have usually about 100 kids there. It got a little smaller as the years went on. Colombia actually started restricting the number of children who could be adopted and the ages that they could be adopted. So the groups got a little smaller for each age range. But it was always really fun. And that's just one of the activities that my mom runs. Well, she ran that one. And now she also has a yearly carnival celebration.
Wow, your mom is amazing.
My mom is a very, very wonderful woman, and I know she's going to be listening, so I think she'll appreciate the shout out.
Yeah. Aw. Well, so tell us, like, I think what it sounds like is that your parents really did a good job of being able to be honest and open about what it means to be an adoptee, what it means to be a family, what it means to be a sister and a daughter. So what would you say for our listeners who are parents out there? What did your parents do right?
I've always known that my sister was adopted, like they told me, because they didn't want it to be something to be hidden. They wanted something to be celebrated, because it's just another thing. It was one extra step to get a kid. They had to fly instead of going to the hospital. But I'd say they always made sure that they were open about it and we could ask them questions and we could discuss it. And they want to make sure it was never a taboo thing, because it's just a way of finding your family. I mean, obviously they're not perfect parents. Mom, you're great, don't worry. But no parent's gonna be perfect.
Absolutely.
But I think the way that they handled it, especially because I know that they read and they talked to other like families who had previously adopted, and they had talked to people who were like big in the adoption community there about how they had raised their kids. I think that was very important because they wanted to get the viewpoints on how different people did it to understand how it can help just the adopted child and the biological children just to understand what it means to be adopted. And then also how, yeah, you're adopted. You may not look exactly like me. You may not be genetically related to me, but you're still my family. And I don't care how you came to me.
I love your parents and I love your family, Maggie. I think that's great. There's just a lot of love, sense of humor. Sounds like great food and exchanges. And so I think that's incredibly special. So thank you for sharing your story. And as we come to the closing of our time together, I ask you to tell our listeners what you think they can do to help create a world where they belong, they matter, and that they are loved.
I would say open dialogue. This is only my third week in college, but I have learned so much because my professors have fostered such a welcoming and open environment where we can discuss everything, whether it's on the political spectrum, spiritual, educational, just making sure you have open conversations about everything with respect and empathy and understanding that people are coming from different points of view, different cultural backgrounds, different physical locations that can affect how you see things. But I feel like that's the way to make the world a little better place, empathy and open discussion.
I love that. So if all you faculty members who have Maggie in your class, A++. So a heartfelt thanks to Maggie Johnsonti for being my guest today. Thank you to Millie Raccoon for sharing her song with us and also just connecting the song to what we had to say today. Thank you, Millie. Thank you to Adam Rich with WOUB for engineering and editing today's program. Our subject matter expert is Dr. Melissa Rizzo, and our storytelling consultant is Zoe Lambert. Who are our creative and editing team? They are Maddie, Maya, Alexa, Linnea, and Mark. And our music producer is Nick Kazernis, who's been writing genre-twisting songs for over 30 years, including this show's theme song, Way to Me. And I am your host, Anna Jinja, signing off with a reminder that the key to unlocking all things good in this world is love. And here you are loved and you are home. Always a friend and fan, this is Anna Jinja wishing you days filled with love, laughter, and peace.